ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Third Foot. Is that what we're calling it?
Yes.
Thought so. Right, start again.
The look of fear that came over your face about halfway through that sentence. Oh my god, when I press the accelerator, it makes the car move.
Yeah. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to...
I think the heat madness has kicked in.
It might have done. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Third Foot, your extra helping of heroic failure. I'm Ben van der Velde, and with me is my co-conspirator in noting down all of humanity's best ideas and worst outcomes, Barry Mixday.
Or worst ideas and best outcomes sometimes.
Very occasionally.
Just occasionally, we hit strike gold.
Yeah.
This is our bonus episode for the month of July. As paid for by our kind donors on Patreon. Please visit patreon.com/worstfootforward if you want to try and help us out on that front.
Obviously, a lot of you help us, and that's cracking. We've got a few scheduled Patreon requests coming up. One of two for World's Worst Sportsmanship coming up. It's either going to be a British commentator or potentially a former rugby international for the Women's Australian Rugby Union team.
Yeah.
We're trying to find someone appropriate to do World's Worst Railway, World's Worst Train.
Was there monuments in there?
Yeah, that's hopefully coming up soon, if we can nail down two very talented historians. And then in September, we'll be recording World's Worst Tycoon and World's Worst Spell with an entire group of D&Ders. So if you would like to add yourself to that list of bespoke shows, then you can pop to the website that Barry said earlier and support us for $5 a month. If you support for a little bit more, like the D&D group did, then you can come and be a guest on the show, and that money is going to go towards us hopefully putting on live shows, and more importantly for us, being able to put all of this research into a book and selling it, because we think a lot of people would like what we have found and you have listened to.
Yes, and thanks to those people who already donate, we are, as we've said before, we're committed to creating an extra bonus episode a month, and this be it. We go back in time to one of our old episodes and revisit a past topic or winner, and look at it in a little bit more depth. And Ben, you've been flicking through a particular cookbook this week.
Oh, yes, I have. This is something that you brought along to play and I fell in love with. It is the Futurist's Cookbook.
So that's from our episode about the world's worst cook with Fiona Sagar.
Yes.
A long time ago now. Yeah, the Futurists. Filippo Marinetti.
That's your man. Futurism, first of all, let's talk about that. It was a manifesto that was read and debated all across Europe at the turn of the 20th century. And it was meant to be a philosophical summation of everything about the modern age. And it was a rejection of rurality. Is that a word?
Rural. Yeah, imagery.
Yeah. No bucolic imagery was welcome.
Absolutely
here.
Absolutely not.
It was all about pistons and steam, but also...
the power and dynamism of sort of like the industrial age... sort of realised.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But there was also tinged with it, well, not even tinged, laminated over it with enormous dollops of industrial paint. There was a feeling of nationalism, of leashing literature to progress, of a beauty to be found in human aggression.
Yeah.
War as a form of spiritual purification. It will come as no surprise to you to find out that Marinetti was a big old fan of Mussolini.
Yes, a lot. He was Italian. A lot of the movement was based in Italy, wasn't it?
Yeah, although my favourite thing about him was that he eventually rejected fascism, not because of any of its morality, but because of its aesthetics, which it took from Roman grandeur.
Oh, right, great, yeah.
He was like, he looked at those columns and went... not for me.
But if they were made of metal, I'd be on board. But marble, not at any time.
The final part of the Futurist Manifesto says, we want to demolish museums and libraries, fight morality, feminism, and all opportunistic and utilitarian cowardice.
Right.
Yeah, so like it's quite a shock to read that and find that something that we both fell in love with came from the pen of someone who's...
Yeah.
Seems that humorless. I read this other stuff about him, about where he first encountered other futurists. So obviously at the start of the 20th century, and particularly the back end of the 19th century, ideas of utopianism and anarchism are still really strong political forces.
Yeah.
So anarchism is this idea of so almost like extreme communism, where we don't even want a government whatsoever, and we live in these little, very small, 100 to 500 communal groups of like-minded human beings who manage to subsist through mutual exchange.
Yeah.
And this seems, well, by its very nature, utopian, but it's an idea that was really road-tested quite a lot. And he first met a lot of the futurists at something called a phalanstère or phalanstery, which was a type of building designed for a self-contained utopian community. Sounds a bit cultish, but...
A show house for the Mansons.
Christ. It was more of a intellectual greenhouse.
Okay.
The name was coined by the inventor of these ideas, a guy called Charles Fourier.
I've heard of him. Why have I heard of Charles Fourier?
I don't know. He was a 19th century intellectual.
Yeah.
But he basically smashed together the word phalange, which just was a play on the basic military unit in ancient Greece, the phalanx, with monastère for monastery. So you get like a military monastery.
Yeah.
It was full of writers and thinkers, and you had cubists being around then as well. And it's a little too early for surrealists, who I do think of surrealists as being... futurists with a better sense of humour.
Yeah.
But so all...
I've just looked up Charles Fourier. I remember he did write a bit about education. He sort of thought that the parents and teachers thinking of children as idlers was wrong, and that they were sort of very industrious people. Because we did World's Worst Parents recently, didn't we? Yeah. I did also remember reading that he did predict that in his utopia that the seas would lose their salinity and turn to lemonade.
That sounds great.
That's the utopia we wish we lived in.
Yeah, that's it's a wonky utopia, yeah. Isn't it? So
lemonade tastes like lemonade.
Marinetti wanted to try and revitalise his culture by revolutionising how people ate.
Was he an artist as well? Was he a sculptor?
He was a poet.
Poet. Okay.
So he created this cookbook, and it is a joke. But it also isn't. He very much wanted to overturn what was held sacred in Italy, and what was representative of that was food and cookbooks, and it's so connected to the countryside.
Pasta.
And
he was big on pasta, wasn't he?
Hated pasta. Yeah, yeah. So he said it made people heavy in body and spirit. It turned them sour and pessimistic.
We're all trying to give up carbs nowadays.
Yeah, he's ahead of his time. And he said it was even a matter of patriotism. If you abolished pasta, it would liberate Italy from the despotism of expensive foreign grain and instead boost the domestic rice industry. And I love it with you. I feel a real link between him and Emperor Norton there.
Yeah. But I mean, you've got plenty of other grain. Why? That seems like going, why are we growing all this other grain when we could grow this grain?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not the smartest economic plan in the world, is it?
We've got this enormously successful industry, which we should give up.
Sounds awfully familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
He goes, what I love about his rant against pasta, it starts out, he's getting too annoyed about a food staple, but then it goes into something far more florid and poetic. So he says, pasta is completely hostile to the vivacious spirit and passionate, generous, intuitive soul of Neapolitans. If these people had been heroic fighters, inspired artists, awe-inspiring orators, shrewd lawyers, tenacious farmers, it was in spite of their voluminous daily plate of pasta. There are Italian mothers everywhere thinking, if I could get my hands on this man. When they eat it, they develop that typical ironic and sentimental scepticism which can often cut short their enthusiasm. Any pastuscuitist who honestly examines his conscience at the moment he ingurgitates his biquotidian pyramid of pasta.
Fuck off, and just say like twice daily.
You'll find within the gloomy satisfaction of stopping up a black hole, this voracious hole is an incurable sadness of his.
Voracious hole.
Great. He may delude himself, but nothing can fill it. Only a futurist meal can lift his spirits.
Is this the foreword to the book?
Oh, yeah, it's great. It sounds like the equivalent of the foreword that the tailor would write in the designs for the Emperor's new clothes.
Yes.
Some of the rules, I've not written down all of them. I think the originals might be in the first podcast.
Mm.
But he talks about a perfect meal requiring originality and harmony in the table setting, originality of food, the abolition of the knife and fork for eating food sculptures, which can give prelabial tactile pleasure,
What?
Don't even know.
Who's wanking themselves off with a fork? That's, I don't know. Was that what he meant? I don't know if that's what he meant. That's what I heard.
I mean, pre-labial.
Outside the labia.
Outside, yeah. You wave a fork outside the... It's, no, what it is, you know how you, like, twist a fork to get spaghetti onto your fork? So futurists, I mean, futurist sex would have been awful.
Maybe you meant, like, tuning fork, because you can see what note a vagina gives out.
I'm not happy with any of this content. he also suggested perfumes which would be driven around the table with the help of electric fans.
Oh, yeah.
The use of music, which was helped to annul the last taste enjoyed by re-establishing gustatory virginity.
Jesus. Didn't he, like, serve maybe venison or something, but with the sound of, like, bugles being played, or some sort of steak with, like, a fanfare?
Don't worry, we're getting to some loopy recipes. That's we're building up to it. Because some of it, you read it and go, well, this is the fat duck. This is Heston Blumenthal.
Yeah.
Because he talks about canapes which contain 10, 20 flavours in a few seconds. Any given taste can sum up an entire area of life, a history of an amorous passion, or a voyage to the Far East. Mm. I mean, we're back to
where we got pasta from. He'd hate that.
Yeah. And then he also talks about using all sorts of technology. Some of it... like atmospheric and vacuum still, centrifugal autoclaves.
Mm.
You know, that's like vacuum packing now. Others, like ozonizers to give liquids and foods the perfume of ozone.
Wow.
Ultraviolet ray lamps, since many foods, when irradiated with ultraviolet rays, acquire active properties.
Wow.
And not true. But apparently become more assimilable, preventing rickets in young children. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know.
Science fans who listen to this, tell me if that's true. That feels like it's not true.
Those kids with rickets, they just need a damn good meal and a warm desk lamp.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That would be a left turn for Pixar to take with their logo. Give them a...
Well, just have a child with rickets.
Luma, the rickety-curing lamp.
They've had weirder plots.
Yeah.
He also invited his readers to invent new flavours through pills, albuminoid compounds, synthetic fats and vitamins.
His readers, did he get people to write in with recipes?
I'd love it if that actually happened.
Imagine in his own, like, this week, Marjorie from Blackburn has sent in a recipe for her cat in a pitchfork.
You pitchfork the cat, open a bin, put the cat in a bin and make sure that you are not filmed.
And it'll cure children of TB.
Some of his recipes include immortal trout.
I bet there's some weird religion somewhere that worships the immortal trout.
Yeah, impossible to eat.
Yeah.
You stuff some trout with chopped nuts, fry them in olive oil. Sounds good so far.
Is the trout still alive at this point?
No, it's not Japanese cookery.
Okay, so it's not immortal trout then.
No, it's not. It's just a silly name, this one. Yeah. You then wrap the trout in very thin slices of calf's liver.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the more appetizing ones.
It was doing all right to the calves liver bit.
Yeah, you have aero food. So the diner is served from the right with a plate containing some black olives, fennel hearts and kumquats.
Uh-huh.
From the left, he is served with a rectangle made of sandpaper, silk and velvet.
Yeah.
The food must be carried directly to the mouth of the right hand, whilst the left hand lightly and repeatedly strokes the tactile rectangle.
Okay.
In the meantime, the waiters spray the napes of the diner's necks with a perfume of carnations, while from the kitchen comes the contemporaneously a violent... music of an aeroplane motor and some music by Bach.
Okay, so that's basically stimulating all of the senses, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like the counterpoint of Bach and the sound of a jet engine, though.
Yeah, it seems like a little bit... Do you know what it is, though? The key to Italian cookery is all about you take 3 or 4 ingredients that are perfect, do them nice and simply as best you can. He is throwing all the spaghetti at the wall here.
Yeah.
There's another one called White and Black, which he describes as a one-man show on the internal walls of the stomach, consisting of free-form arabesques of whipped cream sprinkled with lime tree charcoal. Contra the blackest indigestion, pro the whitest teeth.
Your teeth are going to be lovely and shiny, but your shits are going to be, like, cold.
And probably involve your teeth, though. Some of the puddings are going to involve a propeller.
Yeah.
Another is called the Spring Paradox, which includes a big cylinder of plain ice cream that has peeled bananas standing on top of it to look like palm trees.
Oh, that's kind of cute. Banana
Hide spit. Some hard-boiled eggs with their yolks removed and fill with plum jam among the bananas.
Do you feel like he was doing, like, David Bowie writes his songs, where he'd have, like, chop up the recipes and stick together. So like half of that recipe sounds great in its own, and the other half sounds great in its own. You stick them together and it's a nightmare.
Yeah, very possibly. The thing that I struggle with is just the fact that these, I mean, if they're meant as a joke, they're funny. It's like a good Python sketch.
Yeah.
But because he's like allying it to a political manifesto as well, it's a bit much.
Yeah.
Also, there's some that don't really hit. Like, he created something called the Polybibita, the poly beverage. It's a cocktail, mate.
Yeah.
And also decided to rename the picnic as a pranzazole, lunch in the sun.
Yeah.
Like, and it's... I read a quote from someone called Vivian Green, who is an archivist at a museum in New York that put on a show about it. And she said he threw ingredients together to shock people out of monotony, to shock them out of cooking bourgeois food.
Yeah.
Which I sort of get, but also the best Italian food is not bourgeois food. It's, yeah, it's peasant food. Yeah.
The ones I remember from the episode were divorced eggs.
Yeah.
That was it was the egg white on one side and the egg yolk served separately.
Mm-hmm.
And chicken fiat.
Yes. What was that again?
Roast chicken with ball bearings inside it.
Yes, of course.
I think the fiat car was just becoming a thing.
Well, I've got three more for you before we finish this tasting menu.
Yeah.
As a palate cleanser, diabolical roses, which are deep fried red rose heads in full bloom.
Oh, I mean, that kind of sounds sexy. I bet there's a shipper in Scotland does that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great for you. If you're on your first date.
Yes.
You get that.
You buy them the roses and then you bring them to the shipper and they go, oh, do you want to go? Actually, can you just fry these for us, please?
Yeah, I mean, if you're really, really cheap, just get them off a nearby lamppost.
Yeah.
And then reattach them because that's how you would have wanted to be remembered.
Yeah.
There's a three courses in the middle, he calls. There's the first bit is a polyrhythmic salad.
I already hate this one.
Yeah. You have a box full of undressed lettuce leaves, dates and grapes. The box has a crank on the left side.
Fuck off.
And without using cutlery, the guests eat with their right hand and crank with their left.
Oh, really?
And the crank produces music, which the waiters dance to until the course is finished. I just keep cranking to see how long they would dance for.
Well, that's like they've gone, welcome to our restaurant. We don't cook any of the food and we haven't provided muzak, but we do have dancing waiters. They've gone, are you sure this isn't a theatre? And you just rushed out to the shops and bought lists. No, it's definitely a restaurant, but here, you do all of the work. We'll just dance.
Yeah, I mean, he's created the most irritating forms of immersive theatre.
Yeah, he really has.
The second bit is similar to something I told you earlier. He calls it magic food, where there's small bowls covered in tactile materials, and you hold that in your left hand, or you pick up balls made out of caramel, which are filled with different ingredients, including dry fruits, mashed banana, chocolate,
okay, lovely,
garlic, and raw meat.
That's like opening the bag of Rebels.
Yeah.
Getting the coffee one first. Yep. Oh, damn it.
And the third course is a tactile vegetable garden, which is a plate of cooked and raw green vegetables without dressing. The guests are not allowed to eat the vegetables using their hands, instead face planting the bowl and then chewing it with their face still in there. And then they rise up every now and again so the waiter can spray perfume in their face.
Jesus, these waiters are... They're really working for their tips, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. But my favourite one is the intuitive antipasto. I will read to you from the core text once more.
Please do.
Hollow out an orange to form a little basket in which are placed different kinds of salami, some butter, some pickled mushrooms, anchovies and green peppers. The basket perfumes the various elements with orange. Inside the peppers are hidden little cards with a futurist phrase or a surprising saying. For example... Futurism is an anti-historical movement. Live dangerously. With futurist cooking, doctors, pharmacists and gravediggers will be out of work. Oh, the one time that you do get a decent meal, he is just peppering it with all of this propaganda.
That sounds like more bullshit than any fortune cookie I've ever eaten.
Yeah, he's basically created an Italian fortune cookie.
But with like philosophical meditations rather than... You will go on a long journey.
Yeah, pretty much. And just like vapid futuristic meditations rather than anything any good. So we knew what we chose in the first time, but I just thought I wanted to go back and give our listeners the full tasting menu of all of the absolutely batshit crazy recipes that Marinetti came up with. So listen, listeners, if any of you fancy cooking some of these meals... and trying them. Take some photographs of yourself, send them to us, and we'll put them on the social media feed. Or,
yeah, I think the book is online. You can.
Yeah,
find it,
you can. And if you want to invite us round for a slap-up futuristic dinner
party. I smell extra content.
I smell so much extra content.
If we get to 50 Patreon donors, we will host a futurist meal for some prize winners from our Patreon donors. How about that?
I'm so on board with that.
We're going to hire so many of our dancer friends.
Oh, amazing. And chew and plie. Yeah. And chew and plie. Yeah.
The waiting staff, absolutely going to be in sync. It's going to be lovely.
Brilliant. Yeah, we will think about this a little bit more and amend the Patreon page appropriately. But yeah, if anyone wants to start contributing to our Patreon and get us up to 50, we will put on a dinner party for 4 select guests.
I feel like that's enough people for us to have to cook for.
Yeah, it is. Well, we will cook for you from the Futurists Cookbook. What have we done, Barry?
I'm already regretting this. I think it's the heat. It's so hot today. We're just, like, we've lost our minds.
Yeah, we have lost our minds. And you may have noticed we've recorded quite a lot of episodes where we've been going, it's really hot. It's the same day. We've gone nuts.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's get out of the heat and into the kitchen.
Very good idea. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.